Well, it's great to be with you, and it's great to be with you on Father's Day. I know there are a lot of fathers in the group here. I think I didn't do a formal poll or calculation, but I would estimate the median age increased about 20 years, about 10 minutes ago, you know. So happy Father's Day. That's my family right there. I want to talk to you this morning about thoughts on God as Father. I was fortunate to have a good Christian father growing up. I'll spend this afternoon with him. He's aging pretty gracefully, but I learned some good things about God as Father watching him growing up, but I really learned some things about God as Father when I became a father. That's my family, I'm going to estimate 15 years ago. I know, I look exactly the same, but yeah, I don't know why you find that so funny. Anyway, that's when my kids were young. My youngest is now in college. I learned what God is like when I became a father through incidents like this one. When one of my sons, I'm not going to tell you which one, when one of my sons, I have three boys, when one of my sons was 13, 14 years old, I got on the computer shortly after he'd been on it and did a history search, you know, on the computer. I don't think I was actually intending to snoop. As I recall, I kind of stumbled on it. I don't know why I did a history search. Anyway, I discovered that there were some pictures on the computer that, let's just say were embarrassing, inappropriate, and all that. 13, 14-year-old boy, you get the picture, right? And I experienced a range of emotions. I confronted my son about it. He's 13, 14 years old. And said, you know, I was on the computer, saw some pictures. Were you looking at some pictures that shouldn't have been looking at? And that's about as far as I got. The color completely left his face. he started to cry. And anyway, we had a great conversation. One of the last things he said was, "Please don't tell Mom." And I thought, I mean, of the two of us, I think I'd be the more terrifying one. why don't you want me to tell your mother? He said, "Because she'll never look at me the same." Now, I said I experienced a range of emotions. I was infuriated, but not really at my son. I was infuriated at who would take such pictures, who would put such pictures where they're so readily available. It's not that I was so naive as to think my son was incapable of thoughts or actions that he shouldn't have, but I wasn't really angry at him. I was angry, but I was angry at who would put this kind of poison within a child's reach. That's kind of the range of thoughts that I had. I experienced the emotion of fear and concern. It's more like if you're watching a video, or even worse, like watching a nanny cam or baby monitor, and you see that some idiot has left a loaded gun in a nursery or something. You know, that kind of thing. Yeah, you'd be mad, you'd be concerned, but most of your thought isn't directed as anger towards the kids, but knowing the danger that you know they don't know is so dangerous, so insidious, so harmful to them. Those are the kinds of emotions I experienced. And it kind of hit me. I can sometimes look at God as the disciplinarian in the sky, waiting with some kind of a laser zapper or something, you know, looking for me to step out of line and zap. And I realized, actually, one of the major presentations of what God is like is that of Father. And it's not just a New Testament concept. Sometimes people think, well, that's Jesus who introduces us to God as Father. No, way back in Psalm 103, we're told, like a father has compassion on his children, so is God to those who revere him. It's an Old Testament concept too, more prominent in the New. But that's the portrayal of God consistently from Old Testament to New Testament. Jesus actually corrects some of the misperceptions of God as strictly ruler, strictly king, strictly judge. I mean, those are in there too, but zeroes in, sharpens the focus on God as Father. And it caused me to realize, becoming a father myself, caused me to realize, God is concerned about you and me stepping out of line. But it's not just to zap us for it. It's out of loving concern of a father. So, when I got the call to come to Hope Community Church here in Willow Grove, and we lined up the date, and we realized it was Father's Day, I said, I know exactly what I'm going to talk about. To be God as Father, and particularly the presentation of God as Father in Luke 15. Very familiar passage, but I just want to take a few moments this morning to surface a couple of things. Is that all right? That sound good? Okay. All right, Luke 15, interestingly enough, what we find out is, as Jesus presents God's view of people on earth, we find out God sees people, particularly people that are not yet in the fold, or perhaps have wandered from the fold, as lost. This set of parables, and it's a familiar set of parables, but this all starts with Jesus cozying up too closely, at least in the minds of the religious leaders of the time, with people who shouldn't be cozied up to. You know, sinners. People who are not by appearances at all close to God, nor does it look like they're trying to get close to God. And Jesus gets close to them. Jesus reaches out to them. And the religious leaders of the day, I know we've outgrown all this today, but the religious leaders of today, of that day, said, what are you doing? You're gonna ruin the reputation of our whole church, our whole Jewish faith, if you cozy up to this. I mean, you're supposed to be our Messiah, after all. And Jesus' response is, you're looking at this all wrong. This is not inside versus outside. This is lost versus found. And he says, I'm cozying up to these people because I recognize that God sees such people as lost. More on that in a moment. But we find out there are at least three different kinds of lost. Now, I think he could have given a couple more illustrations. I'm not saying this is an exhaustive list. But Jesus does pretty well in encapsulating a lot with just three illustrations. There's lost like a lost sheep. And you can see how a sheep gets lost. I mean, what do you expect from a sheep? I was trying to push that down to make that. There we go. Got to go the other way. Pull up rather than down. you can see how a sheep gets lost. You know, they're supposed to follow the shepherd and all that. We know that, you know, particularly if it's a good shepherd. But a sheep spots a clump of grass off in the distance, and sheep are kind of dumb. And you go, I'll go over there. And before you know it, you know, the flock has gone that way, and the sheep's wandered off. A sheep gets distracted. A sheep may know he's supposed to follow the shepherd, but gets distracted by someone planning on leaving the flock necessarily, but gets distracted by something, believes falsely, foolishly, stupidly, that he can get a better deal over there, and so wanders off. The third type also wanders off. We'll get to that, where that's the one we're going to expend the bulk of our time on this morning. But I think the second illustration that Jesus gives is pretty telling too. The second parable of Luke 15 is of a lost coin. What would the coin do wrong to get lost? I mean, not to overread the parable, but a coin is an inanimate object. I mean, what did the coin do to get lost? And what's Jesus getting at? Well, some people didn't do anything to deliberately be lost. Some people are born into a situation or somehow land through no control of their own, through no doing of their own, in a quote-unquote lost condition. Now, one clarification. There's not a coin in our entire monetary system that I think I would go looking for much time, you know. The woman in the parable sweeps all day, apparently, looking for this coin. And what on earth? It's going to take more than a quarter. It's going to take more than a silver dollar for me to go looking for it that hard. I'm not going to invite everybody over for a party once I've found my lost, even if it's a silver dollar. Now, this is probably more like, in our culture, a diamond falling out of its setting. I mean, this is part of a valuable set and one of the coins in the set or something, like a diamond falling out, is lost. It's that kind of value. Anyway, this kind of lost entity didn't do anything to become lost, you know, quote unquote, nothing consciously, deliberately, but it's lost and needs to be found. In the case of the sheep, there's a vigorous pursuit by the shepherd. In the case of the coin, there's a vigorous pursuit. There's a search for the lost coin. But then there's type three. And this one is different and more difficult. In this one, Jesus tells this parable, picking up at verse 11. There was a man who had two sons. The younger one, this is the one who's not the heir, this is the one who believes, why should I stay here at home? You know, what's waiting for me here? The younger one says, give me my share of the estate. I'd like to take it and see what I can do with it far away from you. So this father divided his property between the two sons. Not long after that, the younger son got together all that he had, set off for a distant country, and surprise, surprise, there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he'd spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country who sent him out to his field to feed pigs. And this young man longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, And I love that phraseology. Here he is, squandered everything he had, squandered his inheritance, engaged in wild living, lost everything. Now he's out feeding pigs, but he comes to his senses. He said, "How many of my father's hired servants have food to spare? And here I am starving to death. I know what I'll do. I'll set out and go back to my father and say to him, 'Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Just make me like one of your hired servants.' So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him, ran to his son." Highly unusual in ancient Near Eastern culture for people in the authority position, particularly older people, to ever run. Ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The son, as we know, has a whole speech plant. He says, "Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son." That's as far as he gets. The father interrupts him and says to his servants, "Quick, bring the best robe, put it on him, put a ring on his finger, sandals on his feet. Those are the vestments of sonship. You are one of mine, son. Away with your speech, away with your plan. You're going to be received back as my son. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." So they began to celebrate. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. See, out in the field working where he's supposed to be. Nothing wrong with that. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants over and asked him what was going on. "Well, your brother has come home," the servant replied, "and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound." At this, the older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out. You hear that? The brother refused to go in, so the father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, "Look, all these years I've been slaving for you, never disobeyed your orders. You never even gave me a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours who squandered your property with prostitutes comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him." "My son," the father said, "you're always with me. Everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate. It's only right to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." Now, there's not much I can add to this parable. It kind of preaches itself. But I'm going to observe a couple things. One, I think I'm going to start here. This week was a tough week in Orlando, Florida. Now, you talk about a week of mixed emotions for me. This past Saturday was graduation Saturday at Biblical Seminary. That's always a great event. But this year, my middle son was one of the graduates. So I was filled with rejoicing. What a great day. That's the same day that word came through early that morning or late the night before that Christian singer Christina Grimmie had been shot by a deranged stalker fan and had died that Friday morning. Or that Friday afternoon or Friday night late. That night, Saturday night, early Sunday morning, was when news came of this mass shooting at the gay bar nightclub also in Orlando. And then Tuesday, a young family with small children at Disney World on vacation from Nebraska, out for a movie night, outdoor movie night, by a man-made lagoon. Now catch that, not by a Florida swamp, but by a man-made lagoon built by the resort. But an alligator got into it, and their two-year-old waiting in the water where they're watching the movie, snatched by an alligator and drowned, and the body was recovered 2 days later, about 15 yards from where the original attack was. Now, the first and third, now, this isn't quite the same as three kinds of lost, but three tragedies, all involving the death or deaths of somebody's kids. You know, young Christian singer, you know, who's old enough to have had a tremendous testimony. I mean, disproportionate to her number of years. You know, that strong of a testimony, and it just breaks your heart to think that she's gone, and that she's gone under such senseless circumstances. But you know what? In this world of international global communication, you know that that some idiots get on the internet. Am I allowed to say idiots in this church? I'm sorry. Some morons get on the internet and say, you know, what were the fans doing that close to her? You know, that's the first thing you're going to say in the wake of a tragedy like that. And of course, in the third instance, with the toddler, you've got people that get on the internet and say, "Wow, couldn't Disney World or couldn't Seven Seasons Resort, you know, typing it out under the illusion of anonymity, you know, couldn't they have kept the alligators out? I obviously know nothing about alligators or Florida, but." Or how alligators show, or, you know, how could the parents let their kids wade in the water at that time of night? You know, their first instinct is to chide the parents. And I think we can see in those instances, in the case of the first and the third instance of tragedy, that is pretty clueless. How oblivious does a person have to be in the wake of tragedy to look to assign blame, or even worse, to assign blame to the victim? And then you have the instance of the second tragedy, where these are people who were dancing in a gay nightclub. Now, granted, I was focused on Luke 15, thinking about my message on Sunday when I got the news of this. But I look at Luke 15, and here are some principles I see. This younger son really was taking his own life in his hands when he wandered from home. This younger son, Jesus delicately puts it as engaged in wild living, squandered his possessions in wild living. The older brother's a little more indelicate, said, you know, squandered the estate on prostitutes. There's no question that this younger son went off into a dangerous world and squandered the father's estate on wild living. If Jesus' parable had said, and while he was out in wild living, a fanatical murderer came along and hacked him to death with an axe or something. You know, they didn't have guns in the ancient world. But, you know, had killed him. Let's observe first, the younger son would have not thereby been made more virtuous by being a murder victim. We've got some folks that are trying to politicize the tragedy of Orlando in that direction. Well, no, that being a murder victim does not make the person more virtuous, does not thereby make his salacious activity righteous. On the other hand, the main focus of Jesus' point is that the person who's salivating at, I want to see that guy get what's coming to him. The person who gloats at the misfortune of the younger son, who says, well, what do you expect to happen if you go wandering off the family compound and squandering the estate? You're going to end up eaten with pigs. That's the older brother attitude. And Jesus' very point of telling this story, which is directed at the religious leaders of the time, the Pharisees, the bad guys of the story, okay? Lest we miss the point. I don't want to be overly subtle. Jesus' point is, the person who wants to see him get what's coming to him, and hey, what do you expect? That's the older brother that's rebuked. The attitude of the father is, I grieve at what my boy might be up to out there. I scan the horizon daily, looking for him to come home safe and sound in one piece. I might get news that he ripped somebody off in a blackjack game and they killed him. I can't say I'd be too surprised, because I know what kind of horrific things are out there, and this stupid kid has wandered off and who knows what he's engaged in. But the attitude of the father is, I want my boy to come home safe and sound. Now, all bets are off if he doesn't come home. I mean, let's not miss that. But my hope, my aspiration, my desire is that he not get what's coming to him out there, but that he come to his senses and come home. Now, I got to wrap this up. Some of you here this morning might be in the process of wandering from the Father. Or some of you here this morning have someone close to you, someone you love, that is wandering from the Father. It is interesting, of the three types of lost, the third one is not pursued. You know, he's turned over to his own desire, but not vindictively, with the hope that he will come home. And you might look at this and say, well, what kind of gracious, loving father is that? And I don't want to overread a parable. It is a parable. This father looks almost like an enabler. Oh, you want the estate? You want to squander it? Well, here you go. There's about $1.5 million here. You know, have fun with it. I mean, what kind of loving, gracious father is that? Well, he allows the kid to go and do what he will, but where's the grace? I'm not quite sure how to fit this in theologically. But you know where the grace is in the case of the prodigal son when he's out in wild living in Luke 15? The famine. A famine hits. And now all of his plans go to poop. And next thing you know, he's feeding pigs. If it weren't for that, he might never have come home. So, wandering prodigal, if that's you. I still haven't figured out how to make a PowerPoint animation that will actually reflect, you know, but that's supposed to be a mirror. But for those of you who have someone wandering that you're praying for. I know this isn't exactly what you're praying for, but you may be praying for a famine. Or if you're the prodigal, I'll ask, what would God have to do to bring you home? You know, could it be that what you're cursing as famine, as hardship in your life, is the grace of God urging you to come to your senses and come home? I'm going to close with a couple questions. With the parables of Luke 15 ringing in our ears, what do you think of when you think of God? Do you think of a vindictive being that to some degree takes sadistic entertainment when you trip up, or at least is a harsh disciplinarian making sure you get every bit that's coming to you for your wandering, for your departure? Because that's not the picture of God in Luke 15. The picture of God in Luke 15 is not just a doting father, and not just a father who enables to the extent that his children don't suffer some of the consequences of their foolish wandering actions. But it is a hard attitude of, on God's part, that yearns for that wandering prodigal to come home. Are you lost? Now, that's a different question from, are you saved? Have you ever come to a point of knowing Christ as your personal Lord and Savior? That's a great question, too. Some other time, I'll zero in on that question. And it's true. If you've never come to a point in your life where you've recognized your need of Christ, your need of God's grace offered in Christ, this would be a great time for you to recognize that need and that provision and come to Christ. But the point is broader than that. You may be a full child of God, as I am. I'm a son of God. I'm a child of God. But I don't know about you, but I can speak for myself. Children have a habit of wandering off. Children have a habit. I've used too many illustrations from the news, so I won't go to the kid who wandered off and fell into the gorilla pit. I'm not going to raise that, okay? But kids have a habit of wandering off, and it's not good for us. We may think we can get a better deal away from the Father, but we tend to end up either in a thicket or eating with the pigs. As you come here this morning on this Father's Day, are you in a state of wandering from the Father? It's time to come home. Do you have someone close to you? Someone that you love that's wandering? May not be you, may not be your spouse, may not be your own kid, but it may be any of the above. You may be left with nothing more you can do than pray for them. You know, any conversation you have seems to drive them off. They don't want to hear it. Hear this prodigal? He doesn't want to hear it. He's heard it. He's just got to go and do it. Maybe all you can do is pray for them. Yeah, but that's a lot. God is pretty resourceful. And are you alert to scanning the horizon for when they come home. And don't let them finish the speech. You know, don't rub their nose in it. The father here doesn't with his son. Yeah, he's got a speech plan. He could have said, yeah, that's right. You're going to go at least 10 years working as a hired servant. That's right. But he doesn't. He welcomes them home. Does not gloat at the son coming home with his tail between his legs. He welcomes him home, embraces him. It's a safe place. God is a safe God to come home to. Are you as safe as God? For those close to you who may be coming to their senses and flirting with the idea of coming home, in either case, it's time to come home. And today would be a great day to come home. Let's pray.